Chapter 33. Blight. Grand Cruiser Reaper's Shroud. Bridge. A corpse, its spine broken, its ribs spread and its guts left drooling into the void, drifted past the Reaper's Shroud. The immense Vengeance-class warship dwarfed the broken Necrotor, and its shadow entirely engulfed what was left of the light cruiser.
"All hands?"
asked a wet, rasping voice. The reply was curt, with barely suppressed anger.
"No survivors."
Mullig Lestigan drew in a shuddering, bloody gargle of breath. Through the hololith, he saw a grainy, grey render of the dead vessel.
"Closer."
A brief flicker of static, and the image zoomed in, revealing more detail. Chunks of armor plating, fragments of the ship's exoskeleton, entire decks ripped out and exposed to the vacuum, all floated without anchor, all blackened by flame.
"Closer!"
Munitions crates, blast doors wrenched from their housings, bodies.
"Closer!"
Sundered battle plate, split and broken war helms, a fractured eye lens. Faces etched in anguish and rage, limbs drifting free of torsos, bloodshot eyes, frost-rimed skin. Death. Tens of thousands, claimed by the void, surrendered to the great cull.
"Lord Lestigon!"
A ripe harvest, a grim reaping of skulls.
"Commander!"
Lestigan heard, though he kept his gaze on the macabre vista he had created on the bridge of the Reaper's Shroud.
"It was a large ship," he said, "that burned right through the Necrotor. The density of its plasma wake suggests a cruiser or battle barge,"
offered the shipmaster.
"It would seem they attacked it." "Greedy little curs."
Lestigan gave a phlegmy, cancerous laugh.
"She was stricken, and they tried to board her, and then she wasn't."
In his mind's eye, Lestigan imagined the desperate, eager boarding action that must have taken place. Then he saw the larger vessel's weapon banks return to potency and the ensuing destruction that came with it.
"So, Hurok wasn't lying then?"
The last report from the Necrotor had come from within the enemy ship. Claims had been made, outlandish in nature. They were the self-same promises spoken by the Preacher during their last communication. "A Primarch," he claimed. "An unkillable Primarch, vulnerable, lying in state and aboard this vessel. Its purpose unknown. Its cargo almost beyond comprehension." Alliances were not to Lestigan's tastes. He was a purist, and everything that implied, but the Preacher had proven useful. He might even prove vital, should the rumours that had come from the Necrotor be verified.
"A sanctuary, was it?"
"Yes, Lord,"
answered the shipmaster. Lestigan had yet to deign to look at the mortal when he addressed him.
"Hurok's vainglory has cost us a ship, but it might yet yield something more valuable,"
Lestigan considered aloud. Hurok had been the highest-ranking officer aboard the Necrotor and was the leader of a large warband that Lestigan had picked up from the killing fields of Istvan V. Most were dogs that had been left behind, but Hurok had shown some promise. A pity he was dead. Fortunate he did not expire in vain. Lestigon smiled, turning his gaze from the hololith for the first time in a while.
"Summon the Preacher."
The shipmaster gave a curt bow and was about to instruct one of his crew when Lestigon interrupted.
"And speak my rank to me in that manner again, Rak, and I shall force-feed you my blade."
The shipmaster paled, and his hands began to tremble before he got them under control.
"Yes, my lord. It won't happen again."
Lestigon turned away, a wet sigh escaping his red-burnt lips. Yes. Ever since birth, pain had been a constant companion to Mullig Lestigon. As an infant, he contracted a wasting pox and would have succumbed had his endurance and desire to live not sustained him. As a neophyte, he had lost several fingers during an exercise and very nearly his arm, but had overcome this minor setback. In the armies of Mortarion, he had suffered. Against the hordes of Galaspar, an incendiary had taken out a chunk of his abdomen, nearly severing his left leg, yet he had limped away from that battle. On the killing fields of Istvan V, a Volkite had cooked off half of his face and left a melted wax ruin of flesh behind. Radiation burns, phosphex, crippling void exposure, Lestigon had weathered it all and lived. If anyone was unkillable, it was he. Despite many injuries, Mullig Lestigon had refused augmetics, trusting in his Barbaran constitution to keep him breathing. He did so now in a wheezing rasp, having badly burned his larynx by unintentionally inhaling promethium vapor during the sanitization on Istvan III. Every battle, another scar. He knew it was this way for most warriors. His star had never been ascendant. Climbing the ranks through stolid soldiering and by assuming the mantles of dead men, Lestigon attributed all of his modest success to one thing. He was a survivor. But here, now, he had a chance to be something greater, to be remembered.
I shall be the first legionary to kill a Primarch.
Ever since Fulgrim beheaded Ferus Manus, it had seemed possible to slay one of the Emperor's sons. Prior to that pivotal moment on Istvan, it would have been easy to think of the Primarchs as immortal. After Fulgrim had taken the Gorgon's head, the butchery did not end. Like jackals, the maddened warriors of Horus's rebellion fell upon Ferus Manus. Some tried to take trophies, others hacked at his body out of some strange primal instinct, as close to fear as a legionary might ever get. It was Fulgrim who landed the killing blow, though. Rumor had it that Horus himself now possessed the skull of Ferus Manus, and that he praised the Phoenician as the righteous slayer of a Primarch. Here was Lestigon's opportunity to claim such a singular accolade for himself. He had quickly warmed to the notion. Now it was almost within reach, he practically salivated. Even if Vulcan was really a corpse, he would simply take his head and claim the deed had been done to a living, breathing scion of the Emperor. Far from proud, Lestigon merely wanted a little glory with which to anoint his banner instead of just the agglomerated filth of war. His dirty white and green armor, adorned with patched-up blade gouges, blackened by Laz fire, dented by bolter shells, was hardly the raiment of the glorious.
I am a war horse, he thought, sitting on his throne above Rack and the rest of the ship's crew.
His battered helm with the partially wrenched mouth grill sat by Lestigon's side, watching the mortals busy themselves with their petty labours. As commander, Lestigon was entitled to a crest, but eschewed his officer's crown, deeming it unnecessary and likely to be shot off by his enemies at the first opportunity. He did wear a cloak, but it was ragged and brown with the ingrained dirt of more than 100 battlefields. His kukra blade was chipped, but he kept the edge sharp. A double-barreled bolt pistol sat in a rough-looking holster, but it had never jammed, and despite its worn appearance, was well-maintained.
I am nothing, striving to become something. The architect of that goal had just materialized within the ship's hololithic array. Kor Galek flickered in and out of phase until the ship's auger master adjusted the gain, and the robed word-bearer came starkly into view.
Preacher, are you ever clad in warplate, or do you prefer the softness of your priestly vestments?
Lestigan made no attempt to mask his scorn. Kor Galek made no attempt to answer it.
They will try again, he uttered, voice slightly garbled through the link. It is their only choice to brave the ruin storm and take Vulcan into the warp. You told me the turmoil you stirred up would scupper their ship and send it broken into my reach. But here we are, presiding over a wreck of one of my own vessels instead.
Kor Galek did his best to hide his irritation at being spoken to like he was another of Lestigan's underlings.
It should have done, but I underestimated their resilience. And now? I allow them deeper into the storm, so deep that when the Neverborn lay waste to their ship, they will be cut adrift.
Lestigan relaxed in the command throne. His gauntleted fingers clawed the surface of his war helm, adding to the many scars in the metal.
You zealots place too much stock in these demons. How sure are you they are slaves to your will? Pacts have been made, unbreakable pacts. I warrant the Ravens and the Drakes and the Iron Tenth claimed something similar as the first bombs rained down, before the knives slid into their backs. Pacts are always breakable, but you and I have an understanding, preacher.
Lestigan smiled without an iota of sincerity.
I trust you, which is why you must see it done yourself.
Kor Galek suddenly faltered, Lestigan's words having put him on the back foot. He recovered quickly, a genuine expression of satisfaction creeping over his face.
It shall be done. And the storm, when we come upon it, we have nothing to concern us there, do we, preacher?
Lestigan leaned towards the hololithic version of Kor Galek as if trying to intimidate him into being truthful.
I can guide us. And the Primarch, if indeed he is aboard.
He is.
If he is, Lestigan resumed, his head is mine. I have no use for a corpse, cousin. I merely want the shaft of stone that will be jutting from his cold body.
Lestigan smiled. He had heard the spearhead referenced more than once. Kor Galek had called it a fulgurite, a lightning stone. Whatever power it harbored had been enough to kill Vulcan, if the word-bearer's claims were to be believed. Lestigan had considered betraying Kor Galek to acquire both trophies. Once committed, treachery was an easy habit to fall into, he had discovered. But he needed the Dark Apostle and his affinity with the warp to guarantee passage back out of the storm. A bargain had been struck, a pact.
You'll get your stone, and when I've cast the carcass of that ship burning into the ether, you and I can part ways.
Nothing would give me greater pleasure, replied the preacher,
bowing before the hololithic connection was severed.
Yes, Lestigan mused to himself. Treachery had become easy.
Aboard the Monarchia, the light from the doused hololith faded, leaving Kor Galek in darkness. He heard Degat's heavy, agitated breathing nearby.
He will try to betray us, said the Master Sergeant.
Almost certainly, hissed Kor Galek. Which is why, when you have killed Narek, you will end the life of Malik Lestigan also.
He turned. Degat's muscular silhouette was the only visible sign of the warrior.
Does that appeal to you, brother?
It does, said Degat, sucking in a satisfying breath.
How many devoted souls do we have aboard this ship, Degat?
Over 200.
They are hardened warriors, yes?
I trained them, so yes.
Lestigen acted too soon. His hand slipped on the leash of his men, and the drakes burned them for it. But we are wise, and will choose our time. Did you know that when a demon passes through the warp, it leaves a spore, a hook that can be seized, then followed? Think of it as a path through the sea of souls, ephemeral, but possible to traverse with the right kind of imprecations.
Degat grunted. Fewer riddles, preacher. How will you use my men?
I mean to lead them on a path, said Cor Gallic, as he drew something from within the folds of his robes.
It was a blade, slightly more than a finger's length, but extremely sharp. Not one of the fabled shards of Erebus, this knife did not part the materium. It had a different purpose.
If a witch uses an athame to conjure and curse, what is the tool of a chirurgeon?
Cor Gallic turned the blade to examine it, and the minuscule teeth along its silver edge gleamed in the light, so fine they were almost invisible to the naked eye.
A scalpel,
growled Degat, his humour hard to discern from his belligerence.
A scalpel,
Cor Gallic agreed, remembering how he had stolen upon the battlefield to remove one of the Gorgon's fingers with which to forge it. No bone, no blood, just an unearthly metal that yielded as soon as life had left its host. Azirnoth had passed its gift on to the Iron Hands. That power had come to Cor Gallic. The scales of one drake to cut the flesh of another and take what was embedded within.
They fell upon him like jackals, Degat,
Cor Gallic said in a shallow voice, remembering. His distaste for the deed was obvious, despite what it had offered up to him.
It was far from a glorious death. I think it might have been fear that made them do it, that made them tear at him like that, as if by reducing the Gorgon to nothing but bone and blood, his anima would no longer pose a threat.
I care not, preacher. Just tell me what you plan. Cor Gallic eyed him viciously for a moment, as if the madness he had just recalled somehow lingered past the deed whenever he spoke of it, but swiftly regained his composure.
We will do as Lestigen asks, but we will take what is ours also and cut the Fulgurite from Vulcan's own flesh. Then, when the Death Guard are closing in for their kill, I will trap them in the storm and leave them to rot.